Welcome to Men's Health New England. I'm your host, Dr. Stephen Cianti, director of the Cianti Prostate Center of Boston at Mass Bay Urology in Milton, Massachusetts. Join us every weekend at this time for the most advanced and up-to-date discussion of topics most important to men's health. Join us every week as we discuss topics like prostate cancer and prostate disease, sexual health, lifestyle and diet, weight management, heart health and hormonal health. Every week, we will interview national experts in men's health and empower you with up-to-date, scientific and progressive information that you can use to improve your overall health, achieve weight loss, lower your risk for heart disease, maximize your sexual performance, and deal with prostate problems. Now, in today's show, I'm going to be talking about a couple of different topics. Number one, I want to talk about a recent book that I read called Wheat Belly. This is a tremendous book that talks about how wheat is making us sick and how it's making us fat. Then we're going to go right back after that and talk about prostate cancer diagnostics. We'll talk a little bit about the PSA dilemma, some of the problems we face with diagnosing prostate cancer. So join us every week here. Send your questions to me at WRKO.com/men's health. I'll answer them either directly or on the air. And remember, you can call our office at 617-696-1826. That's 617-696-1826. Now, to learn more about prostate cancer and prostate disease, go to my website at drcionti, that's drscionti.com, drcionti.com. And keep on going back to that site for more updates as we continually update it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back, and we'll come right back and talk about Wheat Belly. Stay tuned. Welcome back. I'm Dr. Stephen Cianti, founder and director of the Cianti Prostate Center of Boston, located at Mass Bay Urology in Milton, Massachusetts. Today, we're going to be talking about something called Wheat Belly. So what is a Wheat Belly? Let me tell you the background on this. I've always been very interested in the relationship between diet and the condition called metabolic syndrome. And this book, Wheat Belly, and that's W-H-E-A-T, Wheat Belly, as in the grain, talks about some of the fascinating aspects of wheat and what it's doing to us. Basically, it's making us fat. This is a book that I'd highly recommend. My wife got me to read this book, and she thinks that I have a wheat belly. Can you imagine that? This is written by Dr. William Davis. He's a cardiologist. You can find this book online, and also if you Google it, you can learn more about it. But just looking at the cover of the book, some of the very interesting factoids, and this will, I think, really get you interested. For example, did you know that eating two slices of whole wheat bread can increase blood sugar more than two tablespoons of pure sugar can? So just two pieces of wheat bread raise your blood sugar more than two tablespoons of pure sugar. Can you imagine that? I thought wheat was supposed to be good for you. So Wheat Belly is a very provocative look at how eliminating wheat, even that so-called healthy whole grain wheat from our diets, is the key to permanent weight loss and can offer really relief to a broad spectrum of diseases. Now, Dr. Davis talks in this book about clinical studies and experience over many years, and makes very compelling cases against this ubiquitous product in our diet that is wheat. Really, let's talk a little bit today about what this does, because I found this really fascinating. How can a grain product that is central to our diet be making us sick? And particularly, how can it be making us fat? So, guys, you know what a wheat belly is. That extra weight that sits right around your middle, you know, as the years go by, the belt keeps on getting let out an extra notch every year. And pretty soon, before you know it, your waist is 40, 42, maybe 44 inches. Well, if that's you, you've got a wheat belly. And the cases made by this book is that our diets, particularly the carbohydrates, and particularly wheat, is what's really contributing to this. So that's pretty hard to accept. But let's talk a little bit about the mechanisms of this. So you've heard me talk about a condition called metabolic syndrome over the last several shows. Now, metabolic syndrome is a real disease, and it's really defined by having high blood pressure, by having a waist greater than 40 inches, and by having abnormal cholesterol, abnormal lipids. This combination of having a big belly right around the middle, it's called central obesity, and having abnormal triglycerides, cholesterol, and so forth, really is a tremendous health risk. Men who have this condition are at much higher risk for heart disease, much higher risk for diabetes, and overall, we find tremendous health problems that go along with this syndrome. What causes this? So if you look around at all your buddies out there, you find that as guys age, they tend to put weight around the middle. And that's pretty normal. But at some point, it becomes abnormal. In fact, if you take a tape measure and you put that tape measure right around the middle, not down where you wear your pants, but right around your belly button, the widest part of your abdomen, and measure that circumference with a tape measure. If that measures more than 35 inches, then that's too big. You're at increased risk for heart disease and diabetes. So what causes that? Well, it's not any one thing, but the premise of this book, Wheat Belly, is that our diets, high in wheat, high in grains, high in carbohydrates, high in processed foods, really spike our blood sugars. And as we get older, our body can't respond very well to that spike in blood sugar. It releases very high doses of insulin. And pretty soon, the cells in our body get resistant or immune to the effects of insulin. Insulin is a hormone that is supposed to lower blood sugar and allow that sugar, which is released from eating wheat and other carbohydrates, it allows that to be burned as fuel. Well, when this mechanism is altered, all of the glucose, all the sugar in our blood, again, that comes from eating carbohydrates, starches, and particularly wheat, that blood sugar only can do one thing. It's stored as fat. And so the carbohydrate meal, particularly processed foods, most particularly wheat, our body can only do one thing with that, and that's to turn it into fat. And where does it store it? It stores the fat right around our middle. So one of the ways to break the cycle of continual weight gain is to cut out the carbohydrates and particularly take the wheat and the grains out of your diet. Now, that sounds crazy, but it's really pretty easy to do. Pretty easy to do. You know, how many of you have noticed that, you know, if you get up in the morning and you have that bowl of cereal, and what's cereal? It's grain. Most cereals have wheat in them. You have breakfast in the morning, and then an hour or two later, you're really hungry again. And so you go and you have a snack. Maybe you go and grab a donut. And then lunchtime comes, and now you grab a sandwich. Or worse yet, something fast food, cheeseburger, something like that. Around 2 o'clock again, you're really hungry, but then you're getting really, really tired. This is related to blood sugar levels that are really going up and down all through the day. So in the morning, you have breakfast, you have that bowl of cereal, blood sugar spikes up, the body releases a lot of insulin, blood sugar gets absorbed into the system, blood sugar levels go way down. When they go down, you feel tired and you get hungry again because low blood sugar really stimulates your appetite. So now you go and have a snack. Blood sugar shoots up again. The same cycle repeats itself throughout the day. So you're constantly hungry. I've been there. I know exactly what the feeling is. Now, what's happening to all this sugar that our body's absorbing from the cereals, the breads, the sandwich, the snack foods throughout the day? Well, guess where it's storing it? It's storing it right around your middle, right in that fat, right around your midline. That's not healthy. That's what leads to high risks of heart disease, vascular disease, stroke. It leads to all sorts of problems like diabetes. And believe it or not, guys, it can affect hormonal levels. Men who have this metabolic syndrome tend to have much lower levels of the male hormone testosterone. They have diminished sex drive, diminished libido. And if that's not enough, they really have increasing levels of erectile dysfunction. So how do you break this cycle? Well, it all comes back to diet. You know, you might not want to just live in the gym all day, but certainly exercise is important. But really, diet is really, really important. So the first thing you really want to do is you want to get familiar with a concept called the glycemic index. The glycemic index. So the glycemic index is basically a table that gives a number associated with different foods, and it tells you how much that particular food will affect your blood sugar and insulin levels. For example, if you look at some of the common foods, the glycemic index is arbitrarily set at a level of 100, okay? And if things that are either below or above that, either are high glycemic index foods or lower glycemic index foods. But for example, if we look at a typical food that we might eat, and we'll pick something here. Let's pick snack foods, right? How about fruit roll-ups? That just caught my mind. That's got a very high glycemic index. That glycemic index is 99. And so what that tells you is that that's like eating pure sugar, right? And if you look up the glycemic index on the internet, right, and you look at a baguette, a white plain baguette, right? So what is a baguette? Well, it's made of wheat flour, right? And that roll, that baguette, has a glycemic index of 95, extremely high. A hamburger bun, 61. A Kaiser roll, 73. A white wheat flour bread, white bread made with wheat flour, 71 index. Piece of Wonder Bread, 73 index. Piece of pita bread, 68 index. So these foods all have tremendous ability to spike your blood sugar. That blood sugar produces a significant release of insulin. That insulin release will cause the blood sugar to decrease. It will make you hungry again. But what's happening to that blood sugar? It's getting stored as fat. This is the cycle that we're all in. So what I want to tell you today is that the way to break this cycle is to get on a low glycemic index diet and get the wheat and grains out of your system, out of your diet. If you do that, you'll see a weight loss of 20 or 30 pounds over 2 to 3 months just by doing that very simply. Now, you blend in some exercise, the proper levels of exercise, and you've heard us talk about this on the show, and you combine that with a low glycemic index diet, that's a guaranteed weight loss of 10 to 20% of your body weight over 3 to 4 months without feeling hungry. This book, Wheat Belly, by William Davis, MD. Get the book and read it. Wheat Belly, W-H-E-A-T, Wheat Belly. Because I've never read a book in which it explained so well the interaction of foods like wheat, like grains, what the effect was on our blood sugar, and how it produced this fat that lives right around the middle. So, guys, the good news is that you can fix this. If you've got this problem, you can fix this. It's really quite easy to do. You're not hungry while you do this. It's really not correct to say this is a diet. It's learning how to eat the foods that are healthy for your body, healthy for your metabolism, foods that will take away some of the fatigue, the daytime tiredness, those bouts of just ravenous hunger in which you sort of eat everything you can find. And really what it comes down to is improving your health, because that's what it's all about. This is a strategy that will lower your risk for heart disease, lower your need for cholesterol medications, decrease your risk for vascular disease, improve hormonal levels, improve sexual health, improve sexual functioning. Now I hope I got your attention. Again, diet, so important. What you eat, the type of food you eat. Get this book, Wheat Belly, read it. I'll make this bet with anyone out there. If you read this book, it will take you a couple of hours to go through it, and you follow some of the recipes, you follow the recommendations made, I promise you that the weight will just literally peel off. So anyone out there, I want you to do this. Try it for 2 months. And then send me an email. Tell me how it worked. And I promise you, there's no way, if you follow this, that the weight won't fall off. So we're going to take a break here. I hope this has been helpful, learning about Wheat Belly. But we're going to take a break. This is Dr. Stephen Cianti, the founder and director of the Cianti Prostate Center at Mass Bay Urology in Milton, Massachusetts. Our specialty is prostate disease and prostate cancer diagnosis. Come and see us there. Our phone number is 617-696-1826. You always go to my website, learn more about prostate disease and prostate health at drcianti.com. That's drscionti.com. And please send your questions to wrko.com/menshealth. I'll answer the questions directly, or I'll answer them for you on the air. So stay tuned. We'll be right back and we'll learn more about prostate disease in our next segment. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Dr. Stephen Cianti, founder and director of the Cianti Prostate Center of Boston and your host of Men's Health New England. Now, in our last segment, we talked about metabolic syndrome and a book called Wheat Belly that really gives you a very sensible way to eat, take off that weight around the middle, and overall improve your health. And I challenge any of my readers, as I said, go out and get this book. Find it on the internet. Find it in any bookstore. Wheat Belly. If you follow this, I promise you, you'll lose 20 to 30 pounds over 3 months. So take me up on this. Let me know how it goes. But let's switch gears a little bit. We're going to talk about prostate disease. Now, how many of you men out there have heard about something called the PSA test? PSA, prostate-specific antigen. The PSA test, virtually every guy's heard of this because our doctors talk about this all the time. In fact, if I go back to the 1980s when I was a resident in training, learning how to be a urologist in those days, we didn't have the PSA blood test. It came along in 1988. Now, back in those days, the only way to diagnose prostate cancer was to put a finger into a man's rectum, do a rectal exam, the dreaded digital rectal exam, and feel in a big, hard lump. Well, by the time we felt that big, hard lump, there was already a very significant prostate cancer that many times had already spread beyond the body. In other words, by the time one can feel with the finger, there's a lot of cancer present. Now, that was the 1980s. 1990s come along, and now there's a blood test called the PSA. And when that blood test was elevated to a level higher than 4, that would prompt a prostate biopsy. Now, the biopsy that was developed in the early 1990s was done with what's called ultrasound guidance. So an ultrasound probe was placed into the rectal canal, and a needle was then directed into the prostate in different locations to sample the prostate. And samples of prostate tissue were taken, at first only 6 samples, but as the years went by, we learned that the more samples we take, the more chance there is of finding prostate cancer. And currently, most urologists will take 12 cores or 12 samples of prostate tissue through a needle under ultrasound guidance when they do a prostate biopsy. But this technique of using the PSA and doing an ultrasound-guided biopsy of the prostate really took foothold in the 1990s and changed tremendously the way we diagnose prostate cancer, because the number of men by 1995 who were diagnosed with prostate cancer more than doubled compared to 1985. And we are finding men with a much smaller, earlier prostate cancer. In other words, prostate cancers that were now curable, they were early, they were contained, and cancers in which men were having excellent response to treatment. So what happened? Well, as the 90s went on, we got better and better at doing ultrasounds. We lowered the PSA number down to about 2.5. We also learned that in African American men, starting at age 40, that PSA should be no higher than about 2. And we got more aggressive with doing PSA blood testing and prostate biopsies. So by the time the new century gets here, we're into the 2000s, 2002, 2003, 2004, prostate cancer is being diagnosed just like the measles in men. And I'm sure any guy out there knows someone who's had prostate cancer. It's either someone in your family, someone you work with, one of your buddies. And if you're in that age group of over 65 years old, certainly you know if people have had this. Well, that's created an epidemic of prostate cancer. And what we've learned now in the last 5 years is that these prostate cancers that we're finding, many times very early, they're not all the same. Some of these prostate cancers, and really very few of them, fortunately, are very fast-growing, very aggressive cancers, and really dangerous prostate cancers. They're prostate cancers that have the potential to kill someone just like any other cancer. Now, fortunately, that's the minority of prostate cancers. Most are not like that. Most prostate cancers are small. They're very slow growing. They have a very limited ability to grow and spread outside of the prostate. And they're not a major risk to a man's health. So here's the problem we have today. We've gotten very good at diagnosing men with prostate cancer. And because we haven't really always been able to tell which cancers are going to behave in a very slow-growing way and which cancers will behave very aggressively or fast-growing, we've tended to treat everybody. And so most men have had surgery to remove their prostate, or they've had radiation therapy. The problem is that many times, the men who have undergone these treatments would not have died from their prostate cancer anyway, even if they had left it alone. Now, as urologists, our problem is we've always had a hard time knowing which cancers could be left alone. So not knowing that, we've tended to treat everybody. Well, now the federal government got involved, and you can obviously see what the government's concerned about. They're the largest payers of the healthcare dollar in America today through the Medicare program. And with this epidemic of men being diagnosed with prostate cancer, and now with the baby boomers now getting into their 60s and into that age where certainly prostate cancers become much more common, if we diagnose every man out there with prostate cancer and treat every man that walks in the door, from a financial standpoint, it will bankrupt the system. But even, I think, more importantly, it subjects a lot of men to unnecessary or overly aggressive treatment. So, guys, if you happen to have a cancer that's slow-growing, small, contained, and one that probably doesn't present much risk, and you go and see your friendly urologist who takes your prostate out using a robotic prostatectomy procedure, or you go through 2 months of radiation therapy, in many cases, you've gone ahead and you've, to use an old saying, you've shot a mouse with an elephant gun. In other words, that was probably overly aggressive treatment. And so what do I mean by aggressive? Well, treatment that causes side effects. So the most common issues that men will deal with after prostate cancer treatment are erectile dysfunction, that is poor quality erections. They lose their sexuality, they lose their ability to function. And that happens in a very high percentage of men after treatment. And secondly, they deal with urinary leakage problems, the requirement to wear protective pads when they're physically active. Urinary incontinence, that's called. Now, I've always said that men weren't destined to wear pads. And so now we have a treatment. We've gotten very good at diagnosing, very good at curing, in fact. Surgery and radiation have worked very well over the years. But because we've treated all men who have walked in the door with a diagnosis, we've inflicted an awful lot of harm in terms of men's lifestyles to them. So that's the debate today. Is there a way to better understand what type of cancer someone has and really begin to understand who needs to be treated aggressively and which men can be treated with less invasive, less aggressive treatments, or in fact, which men can even be watched? It's a concept called active surveillance. We're going to take a break and we're going to come right back and we're going to talk about some of these changes today in how we diagnose and how we treat prostate cancer with these concepts in mind. Stay tuned. This is Dr. Stephen Scionti, your host of Men's Health New England. I'm the founder and director of the Scionti Prostate Center of Boston at Mass Bay Urology. Go to my website at drscionti.com. That's drscionti.com. Send your questions to wrko.com/menshealth. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Dr. Stephen Scionti, founder and director of the Scionti Prostate Center of Boston and your host of Men's Health New England. Today we're talking about prostate cancer, talking about PSA and some of the changes that have occurred historically over the last 20 years. In our last segment, I told you about the introduction or the invention of the PSA test in 1988 and really the explosion in the diagnosis of prostate cancer as well as prostate cancer treatment that's occurred over the last 20 to 25 years and some of the problems that's created with a real sense that a lot of men are being overtreated. So here's the question. Is there new technology available? And are there ways to better understand how to more accurately diagnose a man's prostate cancer and how to decide and determine who really needs active or aggressive treatment and who can be treated less invasively, less aggressively, or even watched or surveyed for their prostate cancer? So that's where we are today. At the Scionti Prostate Center of Boston, a lot of the techniques that we use, I didn't invent. I wasn't that smart. But I'll tell you what I did do. I became very, very interested in the research, very interested in new technology, and that's what I want to tell you about today. So let's start off with your PSA is elevated. What do we do? Well, typically, if you're referred to the urologist, you'll be told that you need to have a prostate biopsy. That biopsy will be done the way we've done it for the last 30 to 35 years. That is, an ultrasound probe is placed in the rectum, and a random, non-targeted sampling of the prostate is performed, taking 6 samples from the right side of the prostate and 6 samples from the left side of the prostate. Now, the approach that I use is a little different. First of all, we know the PSA can be a very inaccurate test. There's a lot of false positives. So in our first visit, we're going to repeat that PSA. We're going to measure a more accurate version called the free PSA percentage. In some cases, I may measure a special marker or chemical in the urine called PCA3, or prostate cancer antigen 3. Now, if these markers or these tests all come back and suggest that they're abnormal, now we're suspecting there's an increased risk of prostate cancer. Now, there's now been great published research out of Europe, out of the National Cancer Institute at the NIH down in Bethesda, out of major universities like NYU in New York City, where I'm still on the faculty, by the way. I'm still professor of urology there. And centers like UCLA, who have showed us that using advanced high-resolution MRI imaging of the prostate that is taken in an MRI picture of the prostate can help us to understand if there's a significant cancer in the prostate, how large it is, and where it lives in the prostate. Now, that's a non-invasive test. Getting the prostate MRI study takes about 20, 25 minutes, and it gives us these beautiful high-resolution pictures. And based on the degree of abnormality of the picture, the radiologist can predict how likely that abnormality is to represent a prostate cancer. So now when my patient was back to see me, we've got some markers, we've repeated some blood tests, some urine tests, and now we got a picture of the prostate taken by MRI. And for the first time, we can really go beyond the PSA. In other words, the PSA is a warning light on your dashboard. It says there may be a problem. Let's look a little further into this problem. Let's look at different markers. Let's look at the MRI image of the prostate. Now, if all these tests suggest that there is a risk of prostate cancer, then, in fact, the biopsy is going to be necessary. The difference here at our center, we employ a technology called ARTEMIS, A-R-T-E-M-I-S, ARTEMIS. So what is that? That is a really cool technology that allows me to take the pictures from the MRI and use the MRI pixels to guide exactly how and where we do a biopsy of your prostate. So ARTEMIS is a robot. It lives in my office. We call him Artie. His name is Artie. And we load the MRI pictures into Artie's brain. We then do an ultrasound of the prostate and create an ultrasound model of the prostate. And the software inside of Artie will overlay these pictures, and it will give me a glide path. It will show me the way to pass a biopsy needle to biopsy exactly where the abnormalities are. One of my patients said, you know, hey, that's like runway lights. If you're trying to land a plane at night, you want to land and use the runway lights to guide you, the airplane down to the runway. I said, well, that's exactly right. So I'm not an advocate of blind biopsy. I think that's ridiculous. When you can get an accurate picture and direct a biopsy needle to exactly where the abnormalities live in the prostate, why would anybody blindly put needles into the prostate to go on a fishing expedition to see what they can find? That just makes no sense to me at all. But at our center, we use ARTI. We use the ARTEMIS technology. We line up the biopsies based on where the abnormalities of the prostate are seen on the MRI. Additionally, I'll take some other samples in order to create a map. This map will tell me, once we get the results back from the biopsy, exactly where the prostate cancer lives. We'll know how large the prostate cancer is. And really what we'll do, we'll know that the biopsy went through the most significant area of cancer in the prostate. And now we have a more accurate understanding of exactly how much tumor is present, how abnormal it is, where it is. And as we'll talk about in a minute, all these factors lead into a better understanding of a man's prostate cancer, and now a better ability to predict who needs that aggressive treatment and who can be followed less aggressively. So, here's what it's about. It's about using technology and using technology to get a better diagnosis. Now, if you're interested in this, go to my website, drscionti, D-R-S-C-I-O-N-T-I, drscionti.com. And on the home page, you're going to see Artie sitting right there on the home page. I've got several articles there that talk about the importance of the proper diagnosis, the importance of using MRI-directed biopsies, the importance of targeted biopsies, the importance of getting a good understanding about, if you've got prostate cancer, exactly what type of prostate cancer you have. So go to that website, learn more about it. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is Dr. Stephen Scionti, your host of Men's Health New England. We're going to be right back and talk more about prostate cancer diagnostics and treatment. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Dr. Stephen Scionti, founder and director of the Scionti Prostate Center of Boston at Mass Bay Urology in Milton, Massachusetts, and your host of Men's Health New England. Today, we're talking to you about some of the new technology for the diagnosis and ultimately the treatment of prostate cancer. So in the last segment, we talked about Artemis, new technology that allows us to direct prostate biopsies exactly based on MRI abnormalities, a better understanding of where the cancer is, where the worst parts of the cancer is. You see, if we do prostate biopsies blindly, we're subjected to something called sampling error. In other words, the needle may go alongside the tumor or it might hit the edge of it, and thus the reading on the biopsy may really underestimate the true amount of cancer present. And likewise, the needle may miss the cancer altogether. In fact, in a study from the National Cancer Institute of men who previously had a negative prostate biopsy, when those men underwent an MRI and a biopsy that was targeted using a technology like Artemis, 39% of those men were found to have prostate cancer despite previously having had a negative prostate biopsy done, sort of the old-fashioned way, the blind way. So our approach at the Scionti Prostate Center of Boston is to use targeted biopsy technology, advanced imaging, advanced biomarkers. In other words, let's understand what's present. Now, in one of our previous shows, we had a guest on who was a research scientist who told us that we can use genetic testing if there's a cancer present to determine whether it's a good cancer or a bad cancer. There's a test that we talked about on this show called the Prolaris test. So say the biopsy comes back positive. If that Gleason score under the microscope looks like it may well be a slow-growing cancer, there's some advanced testing we can do, looking at the genetics of that cancer, to document that, in fact, it really is behaving as a slow-growing cancer. You see, if you're certainly in your 70s and maybe even in your 60s today, and you've got a very small cancer, and we know it's extremely slow-growing, research is telling us that you will probably live exactly just as long if we do something called active surveillance compared to if we do surgery to remove your prostate. But here's the key. We have to know that that's safe to observe or watch your cancer, which means you need the proper diagnostics. Now, for men that really do need some type of treatment, but yet the cancer is still fairly small, still contained in the prostate, there are alternatives today to the traditional treatments like surgery or radiation therapy. In those treatments, you've heard me talk about. So using a minimally invasive technique like cryotherapy or cryosurgery, in which we can use ice to freeze parts or sometimes the entire prostate, that's certainly less invasive than procedures in which we take the whole prostate out of the body, or in which we go through a prolonged course of radiation to the pelvis. And the newest kid on the block for treatment, and you've heard me talk about this as well, is a non-invasive technology. It's called high-intensity focused ultrasound. High-intensity focused ultrasound, or HIFU, H-I-F-U. I've been interested in this for the last 10 years, and in fact, have been performing this procedure for the last 8 years. I've treated over 1,000 men with this particular technology. This is a non-invasive treatment in which we can focus ultrasound directly into the prostate and destroy prostate tissue in a very precise, very targeted manner. And if we've done the proper diagnostics and we understand where the cancer lives in three-dimensional space in the prostate, we can use that information to direct energy and kill that area. Now, why would we want to do that? The reason that we're looking to do treatments like this is because there's less side effects. Studies out of the United Kingdom, out of England, show that when we do a targeted, therapy using the HIFU technology, 95% of men maintain their same degree of sexual erectile function. Now, guys, there's nothing else we do in prostate cancer that's anywhere even close to that. Not even close. In this study out of the UK published a year ago in The Lancet Oncology by my colleague Dr. Mark Emberton, there were zero instances, zero risk of incontinence, no leak. So there's technology out there, guys, today that if we have the proper diagnosis and we're fortunate enough to have cancer that's early contained and that still requires treatment, we have ways of treating prostate cancer today that are less invasive than the traditional approaches. Now, conversely, if the diagnostic tests tell us there's a large, more aggressive cancer, sure, that's the situation where we may well recommend traditional robotic surgery to remove the prostate or radiation therapy procedures. But I'll tell you guys, it's wrong to treat every guy that walks in that door with either surgery or radiation. Some men can have active surveillance. Some men can have a targeted partial treatment. Some men are well treated with this ablation technology that is either freezing or high-intensity focused ultrasound. You see, prostate cancer treatments need to be personalized. They need to be adapted to the patient, to the man, to the guy that's got to live with that prostate cancer. And the point is, there is technology out there today that allows us to make the right diagnosis and allows us to determine which treatment options are most suited to that particular guy. Because men, you're going to live with that treatment decision the rest of your life. Sometimes we need to be aggressive, and sometimes we don't. But here's the key. At our center, what we stand for and what we teach and what we talk to our patients about every single day is getting to the proper diagnosis. How much, how valuable is the right diagnosis? What's it worth? Well, I think it's worth a lot because that's what allows to determine what's going to fit you, the patient, if you're dealing with this disease, prostate cancer. So hopefully I've helped you to understand a little bit about the PSA dilemma, some of the new technologies available. Go to my website, drscionti. That's D-R-S-C-I-O-N-T-I, drscionti.com. Call the Scionti Prostate Center of Boston at Mass Bay Urology. We're in Milton, Massachusetts. That's 617-696-1826. That's 617-696-1826. You owe it to yourself to get the proper diagnosis, get it made by someone who's got the right technology and someone who's an expert in the field. Give us a call. We'll be right back to close out the show. Welcome back. This is Dr. Stephen Scionti, the founder and director of the Scionti Prostate Center of Boston. We're just about out of time today. Thanks for listening. Today we talked about this condition called the metabolic syndrome, and I told you about this revolutionary book I read called Wheat Belly, W-H-E-A-T, Wheat Belly, by Dr. William Davis. And I challenged you to go ahead, get the book, follow this way of living, this way of eating, and let me know if 2 to 3 months from now you haven't lost 20 or 30 pounds. Improve your health, lower your risk for heart disease. That's what we talk about. Get Wheat Belly, read it, try it out. Then we went right back and we summarized some of the changes in the prostate cancer world, the diagnostic world. We talked about the Artemis technology, the changing PSA environment, the landscape out there for PSA testing. We talked about new technology. We talked about advanced ways to treat prostate cancer with less side effects. That's what it's all about, guys. How do we can be smarter about what we do? How can we use technology to our advantage? That's what we stand for in our center. So I hope this has been helpful for you. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Stephen Scionti. Again, I'm the founder and the director of the Scionti Prostate Center of Boston. We're at Mass Bay Urology. We are a division of Greater Boston Urology. See me on the web at drscionti, drscionti.com, or call our offices at 617-696-1826. That's 617-696-1826. 866-996-1826. Tune in again at the same time next week for Men's Health New England. And again, thanks for listening. Have a great week.